You see, people collect all kinds of things. New, old, priceless, worthless. Darling, it doesn't matter what. I simply must know why. Those mothballs shouldn't get to keep all the secrets. This is the Mothball Prophecies.
Hello and welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. I'm Samantha Mashburn.
And I'm Swellcheck.
And today we're sitting down with a very special guest to ring in the new year.
It's my grandma, my Grammy Mickey. This is my dad's mom.
Yes. And she has an incredible story, let alone on her own as a child and then moving through her adult life. And in the opening bits of this interview, you get to hear us kind of try to explain to Grandma Mickey what we're doing.
So this is a woman who has never used the internet, just barely got a cell phone because my dad made her get one.
Yeah.
So technology is over her head.
Yeah. So there's going to be moments that her voice is a little quieter. She moves away from the microphone a little bit because she's not used to speaking directly into a microphone. And in this opening bit, you hear her kind of come to terms with what we've set up in her apartment.
Yeah, she was a little weirded out.
Yeah, she didn't think her story was that special, but boy oh boy.
Yeah.
It is. Here's Grandma Mickey. Thanks so much again, everybody, for getting together on Sunday to do this. I'm very excited.
What purpose was this?
This is to record our family history for future generations.
Okay.
Especially my kids, because, you know.
Right.
But, you know, for the sake of keeping the history alive.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
It's important for me, too. Not just them. And it's important for Dad.
Yes, I've kept a lot of the pictures. I've preserved them electronically. Mm-hmm. Pictures that my mother had from all the way back to the early 1900s.
That was in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
In this moment, we have a laptop set up on the table, and like Spellcheck's father says, he does have all of these family history photos collated and listed. And
so he had a few of the photos pulled up on the laptop, and he was showing Sam, but my grandma was pointing out who was in each photo and where it was taken, and so she kind of does that a few times throughout the interview.
Yeah. So we'll be sure to post what we can for these photos. Yeah. Let's start from that beginning. When were you born?
I was born when was I born?
August 6th.
No.
August 6th. 19-
See, you put me in a spot and immediately.
I know. I promise it will get nice and smooth, just like we were talking when I first got here.
Yes. Yeah. So mom was born on August 6th, 1941. I want you to say the name of the city and your full name, Mom.
Yes.
Yeah. When we say it, we don't say it quite wrong. Right.
Because true.
Nobody
can say Mickey.
We have an American tongue, and we can't even say. I can't even say the name properly of the town or the. Or
yeah. No. It's your, all. Yeah.
So
we all say it wrong. Right.
Yeah. So Mom, say what your birth name was.
Yeah.
It was Maria Coleta Lambertina Henrica von Straten.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
And my godfather was he was a bishop, a Catholic bishop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow, when you got in trouble, did they say your full name to you?
I never got in trouble. So.
She was the baby.
She was the baby.
I came about 15 years after my 16 years after my oldest sister.
Oh, see, that's so similar to I have a baby brother that's 15 years younger than me, and it was the very same thing of those long babies got away with everything. Everything. My little brother gets away with everything.
Mm-hmm. And mom was no different.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And still doing it to this day, I'm sure.
No, I was always abandoned. They would be sitting playing cards. No, you're too little. They would be doing something else. No, you're too little. And so, yeah, that was kind of.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like having so many older siblings made you grow up a little bit faster, too? Like you were trying to keep up with them as almost
not
adults?
At all. No. No.
Good.
No, it was almost like I didn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine are 16, 13, and 11 or 12 years.
Wow. And what were their names?
They were, the oldest one was Laddie. The second one was, well, we call him Bro, mm-hmm. which is Broer in Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And then the youngest sister was Lieske, but we called her Sis.
Oh, Lieske. I didn't know that was her name.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. And yeah. Bro, what was his full name?
Oh, God. I don't know. William. It was William. Well, and I don't know if he had more than William.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're not interested in such things when you're a child.
Right.
You know?
No, not at all. I had a friend in high school that was from Holland. He was Dutch. And the first thing he taught me to say was a swear word without me knowing. Not really a swear word. He taught me to say.
Say it. So I know.
Jij ben lelijk.
Oh, that's
what he taught me to say.
Oh,
and then
that's
had me
terrible.
Say it all over.
Jij
ben lelijk means I am ugly.
Ugly, yeah, that's
but
awful.
But they were going, it was in jest, it was not okay. But he told me.
He didn't mean that.
No, and he was like, just walk around and say it means you're really lucky. So then he goes, say, jij ben super lelijk. And I, so
super
I.
Super lelijk, yeah. Oh no.
And then once he told me, I was like, Sebas.
What?
His name was Sebas.
Sebastian. Oh, Sebas.
Yeah, it's a turd face. He's back in Holland, I think, now. But yeah.
Is he really?
That's the one thing that stuck.
Where is he at?
He lived just outside of Amsterdam on the Rhine. And
yeah, see, I lived in Limburg, the province of Limburg. That's
way down. Yeah,
that little tiny country, way down.
I know.
Belgium on one side, Germany on the other.
Wow.
I could literally walk it.
Into the three countries.
Yeah.
Was that a strange thing moving? We're jumping around a little bit. Was that strange moving to the United States and not being able to go like to a different country in four
not
hours?
Not at all.
Or was it nice? Was it comforting?
I figured I was going to live here and I made it home.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I never got to go back.
Mm.
Yeah, and we came here in 1965.
Wow.
And I've never been back. Since. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, the plans were that I would go see my mom mm-hmm. and my sisters. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because I had children right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hard to travel.
Two less than a year apart, no less.
And it was more difficult in the 1960s to travel.
Yeah.
So I never got to go back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then your husband was in the service also. So if you were going to make that travel, you probably would have had to done it alone, right?
Well, I could have done that, but that didn't happen because I had children. Right? Mm-hmm. They were less than a year apart.
Wow.
Yeah, my brother and I were both born over in Germany before we came to the United States.
Yeah.
Wow. My family. So
my dad and his older brother are less than a year apart. My uncle's birthday is November 8th and my dad's birthday is November 6th. And nearly every time my grandma talks to me about children, she says, do not do that. Don't have children that close together.
And that comes to light as to why.
Yeah, it does.
Later on in the show. Did you have to do that too?
They were babies when they took their passports. I couldn't tell apart who was who. They don't look alike now. But
I still have that passport. And it's got a picture of me as a baby. I was only a few months old.
Wow.
I was born in November of 64, and we came here sometime in 65. I don't know the year.
In the beginning of,
the beginning of 65.
Yeah. Was it so winter when you got back, when you got to the States, when you moved here? Remember?
It was, it was going on March.
Oh, okay.
So going on March, so February.
Yeah, parts of it.
Yeah, and there,
There will also be sometimes during this interview that you'll hear Grandma Mickey repeat herself, or almost like she didn't hear the question. And the reasoning behind recording this interview is Grandma Mickey is starting to slip into the throes of.
So she was recently diagnosed with dementia. So the true purpose behind the interview is to try and capture as much of her history as possible, because she's the last of her family to remember any of this. Her remaining siblings are extremely elderly now, and she's not in much contact with them, and the history will die with her if we don't record it now.
The grandparents lived in Wisconsin.
Okay. So. Which was, were your grandparents immigrants also?
No, they were probably second or third generation.
Okay.
The first immigrants that we had from Europe were, I think it was mid to late 1800s, came, and our family name is Rafferty.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rafferties were Irish.
They came
sometime during the Great Potato Famine years. But that first Irishman, Patrick Henry Rafferty, actually married another first generation American, who came from, Cologne, Germany.
Oh.
That's not far from where I live.
So my great grandmother on that mm-hmm. side was full German, and my grandfather was full Irish.
Jeez Louise. It's a tight knit heritage. That's what mine is. I mean, we go back, my family is mostly Swedish, and we go back to Sweden to the 1600s is the last known stuff we have on my side of the family. So the heritage is rich.
So my mom here is just 100% Dutch.
All the way.
So her family stayed in Holland and been there forever.
So tell us a little bit about your upbringing. So you were so far apart from your other siblings.
It was like being an only child, really. And mom wasn't that, she was sickly and it was kind of lonely.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do for work?
Let's see, my dad had a business, an oil business. And before that, he was in the military.
Mm.
I have a picture somewhere of him on a horse. He was,
he was in the
cavalry.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
The Dutch Mounted Cavalry. He was born in 1895.
Wow.
So the picture is from the era of the First War, but Holland actually remained neutral during that war.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
So he served in the First World War and the Second World War?
The Second World War.
I have pictures,
I'm not sure if he was in a reserve status or what he was, because he was an older man by then. He was in his 40s, mid-40s. There's a picture that I have here, and it's labeled 1940.
Wow.
And he's in uniform with his brother, who's also in uniform, and a group of other guys. And I learned not too long ago that he was a sergeant major.
Wow.
Which is a high rank.
Yeah.
It's generally the highest rank, enlisted rank
within
the military.
I cannot find the picture of my dad on his horse.
I have that picture somewhere. I do have it.
He's such a handsome man. Really, he was. And I can't find it anywhere.
He really is.
He was a good looking dude. I mean, we'll put up a picture, but I mean, I get my looks from that side of the family.
Definitely. He is. Yeah, he's so handsome.
Nobody's surprised that, you know, my grandma was the product of his homecoming, which she'll talk about later. But I mean, like, he was a nice looking dude.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And he served, his entire adult life was in the military, correct?
Well,
No. After, you know, when I came along and the war was over, he went back to his business, which was, he was an oil dealer.
Mm-hmm. In between the wars, was he in active duty? Or did he work in the oil business in between the wars?
Well, no. The first time around, he was military. And then when all that went by, the Second World War, he had his own business.
Mm.
And that's why I think he was in some kind of reserve status. But we don't have any records of any of that. And mom was quite young.
I have pictures of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have pictures of him in uniform up to 1940.
Yeah.
Do you remember when the Germans invaded your town, Mom? What year that might have been?
This is where we get into why Grandma Mickey's story is so important. So if you are doing something right now that has your hands busy and your mind not very busy, I suggest a moment of pause for the next moments of her story.
I don't remember.
It was. We can look it up, but I think it was I think it was the early 1940s, mm-hmm. very early, you know, when Hitler was marching across Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he was out of the service.
By then.
Yeah, I think so.
Yet they still gathered him up.
Yeah.
They gathered him up when they came through the town and sent him to a prisoner camp.
He was in a POW
camp.
So Holland was one of the first countries that was defeated, basically, by the Germans and fully occupied. They were occupied very early on in the war.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we start to get into between Spellcheck's dad and Mickey, rehashing this bit of family history.
So my dad will, throughout the interview, he helps her remember parts of the story. Sometimes it gets a little hard for her to keep thoughts linear.
Mm-hmm.
So dad helps her during the interview.
What was the lead up to that? You know, because now we all know
that's what Germany was doing.
Right. In hindsight, how bad everything was, right? But as it's happening, what was the feeling at home as the Germans were getting closer and there was this pending invasion? Do you remember what that was like?
No, I was too little.
Too little to remember.
I was born in 41.
Oh, right. So you would have just been little. Yeah, because I
and my mom and even my siblings don't talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They put it away and that was that.
And then you were coming of age of remembrance when your father now was a prisoner of war, right?
No, I was really little.
Yeah.
So he was in the camp and then came home. And
he came back home in one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his people under him came home. They were there for not that long. And I don't know the history of it at all.
Yeah.
They wouldn't talk about it. You know, even now, I still have a sister and she's still, oh, you don't need to worry about that.
Mm.
It's all done, over and done.
And I can imagine why you would want to be that way, right? To rehash that stuff has to be incredibly painful.
Well, they went through it.
Yeah.
And I did, but I didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seemed all normal.
Yeah, you had that protection of that ignorance of being a child and not knowing what. But that also altered your childhood a little bit too, because you were coming into that as a norm, as thinking this is just your
normal thing. Yeah.
During this part of the conversation, we're sitting there with her. My mind was going to her siblings and her mother and her father, of them undoubtedly shielding her from the horrors of what was happening around them.
From what I haven't spoken to her a lot previous to this about the war, but what she had told me in the past is kind of exactly that. They just tried to keep things normal for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just did her best to not let on quite how bad everything was and how dangerous everything was.
Normal thing, I was never much aware, except that, you know, they were always marching through town and we had big swastikas all over the place.
Do you remember having to be mindful of certain things or act a certain way around German soldiers?
Not really.
Not that sticks out in memory.
No, because
they just walked in. They were not all soldiers.
They weren't still fighting when they got to Mom's town.
They just took over.
They had surrendered by then. And the Dutch did put up a fight, a pretty good fight.
But we
couldn't stand against the Blitzkrieg.
We didn't have the military.
Right.
It's such a small country. And in northern Holland, oh God, they killed a lot of people there. Actually, I saw it on a movie, not a movie. It was an actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were just killing people rampantly. Yeah.
You told me a story when my grandpa got back from the camp. He worked with the underground, and he received some
for the Belgian underground.
Right.
Let's talk
about
it. It was the Dutch and the Belgian.
Right. It was.
So the Dutch and the Belgians worked closely together, and fighting the war after they were occupied.
And what was their objective? Like, what were they trying to? Were they just trying to save people? Were they just trying to?
We had a lot of Jewish people.
Okay.
And that they did get a lot of the Jewish people out before, mm-hmm. but then when they were in Northern Holland, they took them out, they killed them. A lot of them didn't even make it to the camps.
Wow.
Then it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad I was as little as I was.
Yeah. That is a small mercy in right. that part yeah. of your life story, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah.
So even though Mickey does not remember much from this time in her life, the role she played.
It was shocking for me to hear how instrumental my grandmother actually was in the underground war effort.
And we get into it a little bit.
Yeah, just sit down
mm-hmm.
for this.
So was their sole objective was just to save as many Jewish people as they could to
we
move
did.
Them out of the country?
We did. And their army was so big.
Mm-hmm.
They hauled them all in. Some of them got away, went to the United States, to mm-hmm. Great Britain, to Switzerland. But still, yeah.
Do you remember anything about any of your friends or family hiding people?
Yeah, we did.
You did hide people
yeah.
in your home?
We hid them and we got them out of here as soon as we could. And then the Germans caught on and that was the end of that.
Wow. Forgive me, but that's incredible that your family had that part in it as well. And mm-hmm. terrifying also to know that your family was doing something that most definitely could have got them killed.
Well, see, that was my dad. That's how my dad ended up in a POW camp.
Wow.
But he wasn't there for very long. And he and all of his men came back, but he died not long after.
Mm.
And I never knew what was done to him mm-hmm. or what happened.
How old was he when he passed away?
He was 54.
Wow.
Yeah. It was in 1949 that he passed.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, a very rapid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see on the pictures my dad's face all of a sudden.
Yeah. So I recently went on Google Earth with my grandma to find the home that she lived in at this time. It's still there. It's not a freestanding home. She was part of, it was kind of like an apartment block. It was all one big building. So hiding someone in the middle of her city in a connected building.
Wow.
Like it was not.
It wasn't a house.
No, it wasn't a standalone house.
Oh my God.
So they shared walls with people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well, and even just that for that picture you showed, Dave, of them standing in uniform to the one that I've always seen of your parents and you standing with the dog that mm-hmm. had happened.
Yeah.
And the,
but
the
my
aging
dad was
is
already getting,
significant
yeah, yeah.
just from those two pictures. And they're yeah. only mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years apart.
Yeah. Now, Dad was like 8 years older than Mom,
uh-huh.
I think. Don't quote me on that.
That's okay. They're not going to write in. They're not going to tell us you got it wrong. And I heard a little bit from Caitlin about a job that you had that you didn't know that you had, about you were sent out to the market.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, not the market, just anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah. I wasn't even four, not quite four. And my dad would put something in my pocket and he said, keep your hands out of your pocket. And you're going to go, and he told me where to go, usually a few streets away. And there was another military person, except he wasn't in the military anymore. Well, he was.
And he was in the underground.
Right. Yeah. They were in the underground.
That's the unofficial military.
And yeah, and they put messages in my pockets. And I would go to so-and-so, and they took it out. And I didn't know what I was doing.
Right. And yeah. We were speaking about it on the way over and I went, it's the perfect cover because
yeah.
you're not going,
yeah.
I mean, you imagine like my child or Caitlin's daughter doing mm-hmm. that and nobody's going to pay attention to them.
No.
And somebody that's delivering.
And Dad kept enough distance that they didn't know.
Did he follow you then? I wondered
a
about
little
that.
Bit.
Okay.
Well, I never went a whole far,
yeah.
you know, place, but,
I don't know that my son could go in a straight line one place and back.
Oh,
you know, but yeah. That was remarkable that you were sent on.
Grammy's temperament was probably
not as crazy as my child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's,
I did what I was told.
Yeah, there was a sense of listening very explicitly to what you were told to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they said, go see so-and-so. And I knew all the people that I went to because they were friends. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and they just take it out of my pocket. And I never knew why or what. Wasn't interested either.
So. Right. Like, I feel like I'm taking a recipe to them.
Yeah. So.
As this part of your memory, you know, you don't have a lot of bits and pieces of it. What do you remember in Holland post Nazi occupation? What was it like growing up as a teenager?
It was fine. It took us a long time to get back on our feet.
Mm-hmm. This story still stops me in my tracks.
And Grammy tried to downplay it.
The entire time, before we started talking, while we're talking, and after.
I honestly don't think she will allow herself to admit how important it was.
Yeah.
Because my great-grandpa, her dad, was he was the commanding officer, basically, of the entire operation in that area.
And the implications for them, if she were to be caught,
Yep, if she had been caught, the entire family would have been shipped out.
If they were that lucky.
Were that lucky.
You know, right around the time where I was 16 or 17, it started being normal again. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what was normal.
Right.
So that it didn't really bother any of us. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it did my mom, but his dad didn't. Lived long after the war.
Right. Did your mother ever remarry?
No. She wouldn't. No. Yeah. And she was a very sad lady.
Yeah.
After dad died.
As you know, just losing your father, but also losing that bit of humanity that you lose in war. To have all of that collectively happen in such a short amount of time, I think would...
I'm glad I was that little.
Yeah.
Because it didn't leave, you know, I'm not worried about it. If I had been older, yeah, I would have known more
And understood more of human suffering. Right?
We had a lot of Jewish people, and boy, we tried to get them all out. I don't mean me. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, you were a part of it.
Well, they tried to get them out. A lot of them went to Switzerland, England, Spain.
Yeah.
So.
And because of that work, your father was awarded a very special award, wasn't he?
He got an award from the Queen.
So. What is the name of the award in Dutch?
I don't know. I really don't know.
We don't actually have any records, and we haven't been able to find anything at this point.
But it was awarded to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and my dad was one of them. So it was a ribbon with a medal on the top and the ribbon dangling down. And when the war was over, he gave it to his oldest niece, not my sister, but the oldest one in the Van Straten family.
There's a picture that I do have of a plaque that was put on his gravestone.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically says that he had served meritorious and heroically during the war with the Dutch and Belgian resistance while they were under German occupation. I think it was a stone thing that was put there at his gravesite, but Belgium Committee and Dutch Committee, 1940 to 1945, with the deepest respects to our friend Lambertus S.A. von Straten.
Wow. And it looks, from the pictures I've seen of it too, it looks like it's made of like marble or...
It is marble. Yeah. And it's colored. The flags are colored.
It's the Dutch and the Belgian flag.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's my dad.
Handsome.
He was a handsome dude.
There's a picture of him in 1925.
Yeah, he has. It looks like my dad was a handsome guy, yeah.
And there you are at the Field of Crosses at the military cemetery.
And those were still the wooden ones, and they were all replaced a long time ago.
Wow.
And marble and everybody's name.
That
I, and I seen it. They had something on TV about it about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And thousands of American people.
Yeah, in this particular picture, you can see Mom in 1945, and she's behind one of the American crosses. Mm. But in the background, you can see thousands of other crosses
many.
And the Stars of David, in the field there. So these were all American soldiers.
Now, mind you, in this picture that is on the Instagram, when you see this little girl standing in front of these crosses, that's the same little girl that was being used as a courier not 6 months before. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's something that's often forgotten about World War II was how many soldiers died on each country's soil across that part of Europe.
Yeah.
And in northern Holland, they just mowed them down, literally. I've seen it. I've seen it on screen.
Yeah.
They just, it was madness.
Yeah. It was feral. There was amount of humanity left behind in it.
No, none.
None.
Here's a picture also that I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And this was taken in 1940, before the German occupation. And the information I got on this picture, I did get from Mom quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So I typed some things out on the top there.
So this picture that he is explaining to us is Mickey's father and her uncle waiting kind of, it looks like they're kind of by a river on a bench.
Yeah, it's kind of a casual picture, but they're in military garb.
Mm-hmm.
So even that far into, that close to the war, he was still at least displaying his military status.
Yeah.
And these were some of the other men that were, you know, they're clearly in uniform still. Yeah. And I don't know if they were serving in a reserve status at that time or an active duty status.
No, I think my dad was active duty.
I'm sure he was active duty.
Yeah.
But we also have a picture of him in 1915, you know, or mounted on a horse.
And this could have just been, like you see any active military people, right? They're just in their military stuff ready to work for the day. There's a couple little blips of mic stand bumps you'll hear during this episode. That's because Spellcheck's darling little daughter was there with us that day.
Yeah, she loves my Grammy Mickey. She calls her Gram and just adores her and going over to her condo. And so she was very excited to be there for so long while we were doing the interview.
And she did remarkable. Really, she did.
Yeah, and I was on active duty for United States military for 20 years myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually in the retired reserve still, which is if you retire from the military, you're in the retired reserve. So they could call me back at any time.
Please don't join any resistances or anything. You don't have to. Yeah. I think that's interesting too, how you join the reserves, right? In the event that there is something that you may.
I didn't have a choice. I retired, and therefore I am in the retired reserve.
Is that how it works?
Yes. That's how it works.
So that is true for the modern American military, but my great grandpa voluntarily became part of the resistance and the quote unquote reserves. That was a choice that he made.
Well, it's similar in my family of like, we didn't talk about my grandfather's service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and he never served. He was, I don't know.
How old was he?
He was 73 when he died. And he's joined the Air Force
what
right out of high school.
Born?
1942 or 43. Do you have, from growing up, do you have any like favorite traditions that you have that you remember celebrating as a child?
Yeah, we do. The Queen's birthday. It was in April when I was little. And, you know, from there on, we've had queens and then not that long ago. Now they evidently have had a king.
Oh.
I haven't kept track of it.
Okay.
Oh, gee. But, yeah. And Holland is a nice little country.
Mm-hmm.
And where we bordered right on Belgium and all of that, and that was nice. I could take a bus, you know, to Germany and or wherever I wanted to go, really. And actually, when the war was over, we heard the armies that were delivering come in. We could hear them as far back as Liège.
Wow.
And they were singing and marching, and oh my gosh, we knew they were coming.
That's and the American soldiers were coming in?
There were more than just Americans.
So the town that she mentioned, just briefly.
So it's a town just about 20 miles south of her city, which was Maastricht.
Which is where they could hear...
They could hear the Americans coming.
Yes, to liberate the city.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what year Maastricht was liberated, but probably should point that out. But
yeah, to see the timeline of when...
It was quite late in the war, I think.
Yeah, if the Germans were like, well, this is our last.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do.
Yeah, their last hurrah didn't happen, though,
This is Grandma Mickey was mad at the phone.
She just felt like if we just ignore it, it'll go away. Which is very quintessential Grammy.
And she kind of just looked across the table at all of us.
Yeah, just like, don't you dare.
So I looked up really quickly when the liberation date was, and it was September 13th, 1944, to September 14th. And Mickey had told you an interesting bit about it.
So this was a previous talk we had had, but as the Americans were marching in on one side of the city, literally at the same time the Germans were marching out the other side of the city. Mm. They were that close. The Germans stayed that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and they were liberated by the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredible. It's incredible. Thanks for sharing all of that information that you do remember from that time in your life, because it is incredibly important to have first count remembrance of that time in history, because we are far enough away from it that some stuff is lost to time.
But consider this, I was very little.
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, my visions may be a little bit different from the, you know, the adults.
And that's all right. That's your perspective, and that's what we're trying to get, your perspective of it.
But let's talk about some other points in your life and some other memorable things from your extraordinary life.
Well, after my dad died, life was very, well, we didn't have much. Mm-hmm. We didn't have anything, actually. And after that, mom was not well.
Yeah.
You had said to me that she had like chronic bronchitis.
She had chronic bronchitis, and she was sick with grief.
Yeah.
All the way till she died,
mm-hmm.
when my dad died. And she was just not well anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you know, all of Europe was torn up after this. So there was some austere years for quite a long time after the war.
Well, yeah, you know, after I got married and we moved to Germany, people would ask me, well, how do you behave around them? Mm-hmm. I said, they're people just like us.
Mm-hmm.
You can't behave differently at, you know, 20 years after the war.
Right.
Yeah. And my father was in the United States Air Force at the time.
Oh, okay.
So he met mom while he was stationed in Germany.
I keep thinking he's my son, my dad. Yeah.
So
that's when they met, when he
that's
was
when
over
they met.
There.
He was stationed over there.
Oh, okay.
And, I'm not sure what year he went over there, 1960-ish, and met my mom over there. And then my brother and I were both born before we came to the United States, back to the United States.
They were
States.
Less than a year apart.
Which is, bless your heart.
Never did that again.
No, thank you. I hear about that happening to some people, and I go, there's not enough sleep in the world.
I had two babies. I have this picture. You saw that picture where you sitting on a potty, or Dan sitting on a potty. He was like 7 months old, and I was trying to potty train him. Shows you how much I know.
Which is funny. You know, people still try to do that. They still try and potty train babies.
It does not work.
It does not work. No. My son is 3 and a half, almost 4, and we got that down this year.
Yeah, that was funny. Well, nobody told me.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I wasn't at home anymore. We moved to Germany. And
you were also exhausted. So you
not
were...
really. I never got exhausted.
Oh, good job. So, yeah, you're the two, and you're just like, something has got to give. I can't keep changing two children all of the time.
Oh, I did fine, actually. You know, when you're young, you can do it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, this says a lot about Grandma Mickey as her character, right? There are times during this conversation that I am going, God, you must have been tired. You must have been this. And she just literally would sit up a little straighter and go, oh, no, I was fine.
Yeah, she's just very capable. She always has been. And she's always kind of expected that of other people. It's like, well, what are you complaining about? Mm-hmm. Just get it done. Just do the thing, whatever it is. You're fine.
Yeah, that Dutch optimism. That's what I'm calling it.
Practicality.
Yeah.
Optimistic practicality.
That's her to a T.
Mm-hmm.
So when you end, what's your father's name?
Patrick.
Patrick.
Patrick Rafferty.
Pat.
I don't
Pat
know if I ever said what my name is.
Introduce yourself, Dad.
I'm David Rafferty.
The 1 year apart son.
And
the good
yes.
son.
I'm the second
He's the
son.
Nicest one.
And when you were married to Patrick, how old were you when you got married?
22.
Okay. Did you have a long courtship, a short courtship?
No, fairly short.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom was not happy.
he was just the cute American, apparently.
Oh, sure. With that charming American accent, right?
But you know, when you're that age, and I was very young for my age, and boy, hey.
I think naive is the word we're looking for here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he's right. I was.
Mm-hmm.
And mom wasn't very happy.
Did you have a big wedding, a small wedding?
A very little one.
I've never asked you about that. Was it in a church?
Yeah.
We did both.
They did both.
You have to have a civil wedding. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not considered the Catholic Church. Well, yeah, they didn't care about that.
Right.
So we had two. Yeah, twice. Because that was like several months apart.
Okay. So did you do the civil wedding first and then the church wedding? Was the church wedding in Holland or Germany?
In Holland.
Okay.
We were still in Holland.
Was it in your hometown or in a...
Yes.
Okay.
My hometown.
So my brother apparently had a very short gestation period.
Yeah.
Approximately 6 months.
I think that's how it works. Yeah. That's also how my mother
you
was
know,
born.
This was funny. Cause
it's that deployed soldier gestation. When this part was happening, we of course know the story of this, and we're sitting there, and then your dad just spearheads it.
So my grandma to this day is still very liberal about her views on sex, and my dad is the exact opposite. And even though he's the one who mentioned the fact she was pregnant during the wedding, he got very uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's a part that comes up of me and Grandma Mickey just conversing.
Yeah, just real frank adult talk. And
you'll
my,
hear Dave's reaction.
My dad can't handle it.
We were living in Germany, and we went home on my birthday, and I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom looks at me, she said, "What happened?"
You're like, I have no idea. We shared the same coffee cup.
I didn't say anything.
This horrible thing happened.
I didn't tell her when we got married that I was pregnant. And,
oh,
you know.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know, how does it happen and you look at her?
And Mom looked at me, well, what happened?
Well, when two people love each other very much and they decide that they can't keep their hands off of each other.
Well, very much, yeah.
I remember when I did that math for my mom and my grandparents, and I went, this is her, and then I was like, oh
yeah, the same. My mom, God, she was just...
So you can hear my dad breathing just there. And that is actually the signal that my dad is just about to burst out with discomfort. That's the Rafferty grunt of like, you need to stop.
My mother does something similar also. And it was also, I was just trying to be as candid. And I explained that before we started the interview. I said, I'm going to just ask questions to Mickey as if Mickey and I had just met at a tea party or something.
Yep. And Dad thought he was prepared.
Sorry, Dad.
She wouldn't tell anyone. Well, by then I moved to Germany, so she didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, she didn't have to explain it to the neighbors.
Which I'm sure, I mean, was she married when she got pregnant?
No.
See?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, mom and dad. Actually, my dad tried to marry my mom, and she was an only child and had very little. She didn't have very many relatives, and they wouldn't let her marry my dad.
Oh.
I still don't know why, because he was very handsome and came from a good family. And so when mom's parents died in the same year, and she was only young.
Wow.
And so when they died, she was in her 20s, and she married my dad.
He waited for her.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Interesting how that kind of repeats cycles, right, when we find our partners after that. So you and Patrick were married and then quickly became a whole family.
Yeah.
And then a second child came along.
Yeah.
And this was all while you were still in Germany, correct?
Yes.
So that must have been at the beginning of his, like, stationing time.
No.
I'm not sure what year he got there.
Okay.
No, he re-enlisted. Because we were married at that time.
So he would have gotten to Germany in maybe 1960, maybe 61?
No, it was after we were married.
Mm-hmm. No, you were married in Germany. But when did he first get to Germany?
When did
the military first move him to Germany?
It was after he was in Iraq.
Iraq?
Yeah.
What happened?
Oh, we were dating, and I lived in the middle of a city, and he was in a hurry, and he didn't watch, and he was driving a military truck.
Oh, dear.
And he didn't make the bridge.
The overpass was too low.
Yes, it was too low.
I have heard that story.
He would have been internet famous.
Oh, probably.
God, yeah.
And that's when they moved him to Germany.
Oh, dear Lord.
If you know nothing else about my grandpa, that's really all you need to know about him.
This is the move to Germany so he'd stop going so far in a military vehicle to see your grandmother.
Oh, well, he just wrecks shit. Still to this day in his 70s.
Oh, God. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Oh, dear Lord.
So when did he get to Holland? Was he stationed in Holland?
No, he was stationed in Belgium.
Oh, when did he get there?
No, in Germany.
He was... At first, he was stationed in Belgium, and they moved him to Germany after
the wreck. Okay. I knew about the wreck.
And this was in that further tip of Holland, right, where you could basically skip rope across.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's all coming together.
Really, and they moved him down to Germany, and then he met you, all in the early 60s.
Wow.
Now, he was quite young. He was 17 when
he was younger than me.
Yeah. Grandpa's
I'm older than him.
Oh. So he was only 19 or so when
he was 9.
And he saw this older, beautiful Dutch woman, and he went,
yeah,
I got to wreck a truck to get her to love me.
Every military guy I knew that ever went to Germany said that about German women, too, by the way. They're all quite beautiful.
Well, I mean, it's not a lie.
I'm not German.
What? Yeah, Dad.
Dutch. Did I say
you
German?
You said German.
Sorry.
It's a Freudian slip.
I meant Dutch women.
So here, my dad slipping and saying German instead of Dutch, my grandma got visibly irritated.
Yes, and I'm sitting at the end of the table just going... How's this going to remedy itself?
Dave, what did you just do?
And then you hear it. You hear her. I'm Dutch.
Yeah.
Not German.
I meant Dutch women.
I had to sit them straight.
You do. Still. For the rest of your life, you have to constantly
pick
on your children.
That's kind of a thing that it's been studied that Dutch people are considered very beautiful. Kind
really?
Of across. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've never heard that.
Yep, it's true.
Highly sought after.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were one of the smallest. People
shortest
and students. After yeah short yeah and after that they
that's
started,
why your husband didn't know how to drive the truck.
They started growing though.
Oh, that's because of
and then they were the tallest.
It's from us.
Yeah,
statistically Dutch people are now the tallest in the world.
Yes,
and what's the average?
The average for a man is 6'1", and the average for a woman I think is 5'10".
Wow.
Yeah, and I
in the United run. In the United States an average
it's
man
several
today
inches shorter.
Is like 5'10", I think.
Mm-hmm. 5'10" or 5'9", yeah.
So let's talk about when you were first coming to America. Did you have like a preconceived notion of what America was going to be like?
I watched a lot of movies and I saw a lot of Doris Day movies.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
So go for it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? And nobody looked like Doris Day.
No.
And they didn't dress like Doris Day. Mm-hmm. And then the homes, I lived in a city and the homes were houses. So
it's apart. Okay. Yeah.
You know, and I was totally, this is weird.
So we went to South Carolina first, right? And when we first came, you did tell me a story about you were looking for an apartment to live in. So here my mom and dad just come back to the States in 1965.
Oh, moving to the South during another.
Right. And so you were looking at a house. Do you remember? And there was it was in a neighborhood with quite a lot of, African American folks. Tell me what the woman said to you.
I literally went from house to house and this lady opens the door and I asked her, did she know of any places we could buy?
Uh-huh.
And she looked at me. She says, honey, child, you don't want to live here. It's not good. And, you know, I thought that had all been resolved.
Oh, right.
You know, and really, this was what you...
Was this woman speaking to you? Was she white or was she black?
She was black.
Okay.
And I didn't care.
Yeah, but she was just telling you.
She says, you don't want to...
So apparently it was a black neighborhood.
Okay.
Well, I didn't care, and I didn't realize... I thought that had all been taken care of.
Because probably from the outside looking in, it had been portrayed that way.
Yes.
Right.
I was really disappointed.
Yeah. I can imagine just being from Holland, watching what happened to a minority group, Jewish people, and Romney gypsies, and all of those things happening. And then coming to a country that is seen through rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandma was just completely oblivious to the fact that the civil rights movement was really just in its infancy when she got to America.
Mm-hmm.
Because that kind of segregation was so far behind it was pretty much done with in a lot of places in Europe. But when she came to the U.S., especially to the kind of more southern states, it was a big shock for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she mentions too here shortly about how everything that had been put out in related to the civil rights movement, the media that was coming across and overseas, had led the world to believe that it was fine. Everything was fine and everything had been handled.
And it's a really good example of how the media can twist what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. To come here and find out that people are being just as terrible.
Yeah. I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe it.
Because I really thought it had been resolved and we were all equal and we have equal rights. And
there was still, I mean, quite a bit of segregation in the South at that time.
And that was in the South. Yeah.
Wow.
I thought it was taken care of.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, to come and experience it, that must have been...
That was really, kind of...
It's upsetting, very.
Hey, you know, your dad never talked about things like that.
No, probably not.
No,
he was from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was normal to him.
He wasn't from the South.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Our family, he'd probably never been there before.
Mm-hmm. It's also, too, you know, when your dad speaks of his father, not speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that it just wasn't talked about.
Yeah. Well, he was from a white family in a white neighborhood in a white city.
Yeah.
It wasn't in his radar.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he didn't mention it to Grammy before they came to the States.
Right. Didn't affect them.
Nope.
Yeah. That was, you know, kind of the same thing in my family. You didn't. And that's where we get to now where... You know, we're still dealing with all of the monstrosities.
That's white privilege.
Yeah.
That's the epitome right there.
To not have to be aware of it.
Yeah, to not even, like, think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long, what other places did you live?
Oh, gee.
You went to Wisconsin at least for a little while, didn't you?
I went to Wisconsin when
That was later. So we went to Mountain Home Air Force Base.
Oh.
Yeah, we lived on
right here.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, we lived in Mountain Home Air Force Base for several years.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
It would be 67-ish to 68.
We lived in South Carolina at the time.
Yeah.
Well, from there we went to Mountain Home Air Force Base.
Yeah. But we lived in
Idaho.
Yeah.
Where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's funny that we ended up here.
After all that time.
There's a reason we ended up here, though, is that Dad really liked being in Idaho. He liked the hunting and fishing opportunities. Yes. He liked the
wilderness. He wanted to go back to Idaho.
I was about 3 years old, and we were out in the desert driving around in an old pickup shooting at rabbits. And
very Idaho.
Two boys standing in the pickup truck rattling through the sagebrush.
So we cover Grandma Mickey's beginnings, right? We talk about all of these things. Now we're working through kind of as they're moving around as a military family.
Yeah, into her adulthood and becoming a mother and trying to wrangle her children.
Yes. So now we want to share some of the favorite stories that Dave shared from his childhood as a military family.
Yeah, and this is stuff I grew up on, and it's just hilarious.
It's fantastic. So in this part, we're getting into kind of the early childhood life of the Rafferty's.
Yeah, so this would have been in the late 60s, early to mid 70s.
Yeah, and we're talking about how Mickey grew up in a city and Patrick grew up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and Grandpa wanted to get back to, a more rural setting.
He did his best.
So in 1974, we went to Vichy, Missouri, because it was named, it was a town of a population of about 200. It's what the sign said, but it was super rural.
Yeah, it was.
And really wasn't 200 people there. Maybe if you scoured the county, you'd find 200.
It was just a big street and a few houses on the sides.
And what did you think of that?
That was fine.
I loved it.
I'm not that picky.
I was 10 years old by then.
And that's like bike time. That's like Roman.
Bikes, going, doing what we... Yeah. Mom had two little girls at home, and my brother and I were what I refer to as feral children by then.
Basically the terror twins out.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were.
Oh, living amongst.
And Dad gave us guns, and we went hunting, and we went fishing whenever we wanted to. And
the things I found out, not that long ago, the stuff that they did. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I didn't know. I would have died.
Yeah, that's at the time in your life when you're like, I can build a fort and live here forever.
They said
we did.
They sent. They set did. Back a bank on fire.
They set a bank on fire.
Oh my God.
It was not an active bank.
I didn't.
It was still a bank.
It was an abandoned bank.
I love how he's justifying it in this moment.
Yeah.
It was not. And they're talking about a bank, like a building, not a bank on a hillside or ditch.
Yeah, no, this was the bank in Vichy that my father set on fire. That's exactly what he's saying is what actually happened.
Oh, God.
Set it on fire.
I knew about the fire, but I didn't know. They didn't tell me.
No, we didn't tell anybody. No. We did it. But in a town that size, there was five boys in that town.
Just kidding. Yeah.
They knew who did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those five boys. But really, it was all five of us.
Yes. The things that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the town that had the Triggies and the...
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Please talk about this.
There was two main families in this town, and it's this place is all still there, by the way.
It is.
I don't want to...
Still just 200 people, probably?
Yeah.
No, not even that, I'm sure.
Oh, God. Okay. It's like Goshen.
But the old families, I think, have kind of moved on since then. That was 1974. So the adult people that were in that town in 1974...
Yeah, all the stuff that I found out later, what they had...
Those people are all gone now.
You know, they probably were like, I can't live in a town with 5 10-year-old boys anymore that are going to set.
But this was on a state highway. Highway 63 runs north and south through Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And this is down on the edge of the Ozarks.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
These were the stomping grounds of Jesse James and his gang.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that long.
And the Rafferty
before.
Boys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, there was two main families in the town were the Jameses,
mm-hmm.
who were blood kin to Jesse James, and the Priggies.
The Priggies, yeah.
I grew up on this story.
Oh, my God.
These were all fine people. We were interlopers, really. Were. We moved into town. And the reason that we moved there is because my dad wanted to go finish his college education.
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Missouri, the engineering part of that university was in Rolla, Missouri, which was 13 miles down that main U.S. highway, or state highway, 63. So it was 13 miles down the road. But he didn't want to live in Rolla, Missouri, which... Mm-hmm. I don't know what the population was, 5 or 10,000 is all.
Too big.
Mm-hmm. He climbed on the roof and he says, I don't see any green as far as I can look.
Yeah.
Because it was all.
That was in St. Louis.
Wow. Yeah.
Which was terrible. I didn't like it there either. But I was just a little boy, and my dad was teaching me about hunting and fishing and all that stuff. So when we got to Vichy, we were basically turned loose.
Wow.
Yeah,
my mom took care of the little girls, which was my two sisters.
Wow! Yeah.
So he finished his degree there in computer science and electrical engineering. And once that got done by 1977, we moved north in Missouri still to Columbia, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we moved there is because he got a job teaching at the university.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was teaching at the university there. And all along, his main objective was to work his way back to Idaho.
Okay.
So you understand now as an adult, from the time he left Mountain Home till 1980, so he's for 3 years he taught there at the University of Missouri in Columbia. So that was 10 years. But to an adult, 10 years isn't that long,
right?
You know, but to a child, that's most of your childhood. Mm-hmm. So I did most of my childhood was in
Missouri, which makes sense.
I liked Missouri.
I was 15 when we landed here in Idaho Falls because my dad.
I like it here too.
My dad got a job at the INL.
The house they moved into is still there.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Just down the road here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From where we're sitting right now.
And then you were.
So mom has been here for 41 years now.
Okay.
Holy
shit. That's a long time.
I didn't finish that.
I got it for you. I'll take the heat for the swear. I got you. I'll take it all.
God.
Yeah, it's eerily similar to kind of my family's transition back to Idaho too, because it was in the 81 when they moved back here from England.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
after
boy.
Being gone. But my grandpa's from here, you know, but it's the same kind of
bouncing around a lot. And
my grandma still lives in the same house that they moved to.
So you understand that for mom, the moving stopped.
Yeah.
For me, it didn't.
No.
I left here.
And he went
3 years later. And 1983, I graduated high school and married my current wife of 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it is 38.
Because I'm 31.
And then
they were good kids.
Except for the bank fire. We'll allow it. But
you know, I grew out of that. I was a mischievous young person. Extremely mischievous.
They were little. Never mind.
I refer to my youth as my feral days. I was a feral child.
Those some of the things I found out, thank God, a lot later.
So this little bit right here, we're talking about how Mickey, your grandmother, is still kind of like astonished at all the things she's learning about.
Yeah, she didn't get the full picture of all the shit that my dad and his brother got into until well into their adulthood.
Like the last several years.
Yeah.
Here's one of those stories. Would they just come home and be like, no, nothing happened today. Ate some bugs. Made a stick sharp.
Here's some snakes.
I'll tell them about when we did bring snakes back.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's not a joke.
When we lived in Peabody, in England. So my brother and I were out in the woods and we were digging through. And we found, we were quite little, and we found some big night crawlers, we thought at first, but we put them all in our pockets and took them back home.
Yeah.
Turned out they were baby copperheads.
The way your mother was also rubbing her forehead.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
when
a poisonous.
When I saw them, this is not a big worm. This is a...
These are poisonous snakes.
That you brought home in your pockets.
Yeah. That's the kind of boys we were.
Yeah.
Oh, If I'd known at the time all the things that they did, I would have died.
Oh, my gosh.
I found out a whole lot later, you know, mm-hmm. after it was all over and done with. The things they got into.
I think, yeah, that's pretty. There's stuff now that my mother finds out that we did as children.
Well, yeah, that's fairly normal.
And I say, yeah, we weren't going to tell you then. We knew we had.
No.
This is, so we start with the snake story, okay? Mm-hmm. We start with this.
Because that's the tame part.
And then it leads into this story.
Which is insanity.
As a mother mm-hmm. to a small person.
Yep.
Imagining them going through these.
Yeah, it makes you want to throw up. I really think that this is just, it's a miracle I'm as normal as I am.
And that's a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, I love you, but.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Dad.
Well, I think we were arrested twice on Mountain Home Air Force Base.
Yeah, because didn't you fill up the neighbor's car with water?
We were arrested at ages of 3 and 4 mm-hmm. on Mountain Home. I had just had my third baby.
Oh,
and I couldn't see them, and they were sitting in the middle of the road in a big cardboard box, and with the two other little boys that were with you, 4 kids in the middle of the street in a box with cars zooming by.
Dad told us to play in traffic, so I guess we did.
You took it literally, yeah.
They also used to lay on the runways and watch the planes.
Well, that's the time we got arrested.
Yeah.
We climbed that fence, you know, the one that said deadly force authorized.
And here come the cops. They come with 4 little guys, 2 of mine and 2 other ones.
Probably made their whole day, really.
And, yeah, here they come in the police. With the police.
I got to ride in a military Jeep.
You need to watch your children better. And I had just had my third one.
Oh.
And I was looking for them. They escaped.
This is where I've heard stories of Spellcheck's dad.
He had a creative childhood.
And this is where I start to really feel some, I don't know, for your grandma, something.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
It's amazing she didn't murder those kids.
It's incredible.
Literally.
We climbed the fence with the, you know, the
mm-hmm. The razor wire.
The razor wire uh-huh. top. Got off the airfield, past all those lines that say deadly force authorized beyond sure. this. We couldn't read.
We're not reading at the time.
No, they didn't.
I was three and my brother was 4 and mm-hmm. and we laid down on the end of the runway, and I remember it vividly. Kind of like Mom remembers some of those things from World War II, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. But the F-4s were coming right over our heads. And apparently one of the pilots called back in a panic that there was 2 little boys laying on the runway.
The thing is, though, those military police and that pilot still had that story to tell. To be like, you want to hear the craziest? It's not a war. It's not. I'm taking off from Mountain Home,
and there's toddlers. 2
toddlers cheering me on.
Yes. So they hauled us.
And I had just had. I was nursing. Not. I wasn't nursing. I was feeding the baby. And when I went out, and the boys were not there.
And, I mean, as a mom, you don't think your kids are laying underneath a fighter pilot jet. Like, you don't think, like, wonder what they're getting into. Probably eating something they shouldn't be. Oh, no.
Yeah,
well, the cops.
Just committing federal offenses.
The cops bawled me out.
Did they?
Yeah.
Dad got in a little trouble, too. I think this is part of the reason that he
was in the
wanted
service.
To get out of the Air Force.
So this was your this dad's, was... His next Germany experience. Just keeps getting. He's like, now it's my kids trying to wreck planes.
Well, then we went around the base not long after that, breaking windows in housing. But we thought they were abandoned houses. They just were unoccupied. Military housing, unoccupied.
And here comes the cops again.
Here come the cops again.
And I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Those Rafferty boys.
Yeah.
So I'm sure my dad got balled out by the commander
they
pretty
did.
Good.
He did, yes.
And he was happy to exit the Air Force not long after that. But then they sent him to Vietnam, which is part of the story we already told you.
Oh,
yeah.
There's the lead up to the...
Mm-hmm.
So and then you took these terror twins to Wisconsin.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
What my dad doesn't say here is that my grandpa was almost court-martialed. But that was the second time he had almost been court-martialed because of what my dad and his brother did.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, dear.
There's another military-involved story.
Well, my brother was a Marine. He is a Marine. Marines are funny that way.
Yeah, they're Marine forever.
They're always a Marine. Yeah. I'm a retired Air Force. Mm-hmm. I don't still think of myself as an airman.
Yeah, if I say it to my brother, he goes, he just like looks at me like, oh, sorry, Mr. Marine, sir.
Correct. Yeah, so Marines are that way. Mm-hmm. And that's good. That's they have a proud heritage. The Marine Corps psychopaths. Anyhow, you want to bring up?
Well, you know more. You can explain it better than I can. I just how he got in trouble, and then Grandma Mickey had to like hound the governor to get a hold of him.
Oh yeah. Well, what happened is my brother was Marine. He was stationed at an embassy in Budapest, Hungary, mm-hmm. Which was a communist country at the time. Yeah. So Marines in that capacity are not supposed to fraternize with the local women or anything else. Mm-hmm. Well, it just so happened at that very time there was a Sergeant Lone Tree, and I don't know what his rank was at that particular time, that was apparently stationed at the same place with the same job as my brother.
Okay.
Well, he turned out to be a spy. You could look it up. It's a matter of record.
Yeah,
I don't really remember what kind of secrets he was giving away or anything like that, but it brought the investigation down on everyone that was around him, including my brother. And so they whisked him off, my brother, they whisked him off to, I really should let him tell the story because he knows the exact details of it. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he was being questioned. Maybe interrogated about this Lone Tree guy. And the truth is, he didn't know anything about this guy other than he knew who he was. Mm-hmm. He certainly wasn't involved in that. I doubt there's anyone more patriotic than my brother and I in this country.
You know, they called me at work.
Yeah, they called Mom. And so several months later, when Mom was trying to get a hold of Mom was trying to get a hold of my brother and couldn't get a hold of. And do you remember what you did, Mom?
Yeah, I went to one of the dignitaries downtown, and I said, I need to know where my son is.
Wow.
And you contacted one of our senators here in Idaho.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know who the senator was, but...
Because at the time you didn't know where he was?
Well, I knew vaguely where he was.
Just vaguely, but hadn't heard from him in... several months, apparently. Yeah,
they'd been keeping him for a while.
And after a conversation with one of our senators, state senator, or U.S. senator, it was one of the U.S. senators, mm-hmm. and I don't know who it was. Mom relayed this story to me later on.
A lot of that is gone.
Within a very short amount of time, like an hour or 2 hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, he called and told Mom exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And was this while he was being interrogated because of his association with the spy?
Yes. Yep. And it was just because he was in the same, at the same place.
Right.
It
wasn't because they're trying to figure out where everything is, right? They got to cross all that out and make sure that.
Yeah. So he didn't get in any trouble for that, but it did turn out he had fraternized with a few local women, which was the means that they used to start getting cultivate.
The literal honeypot thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was the means that they did use to cultivate
spies. Tell me your secret.
So but he got on just a little bit of trouble for that.
Yeah.
Nothing really to speak of.
But yeah, Grandma, she like went in and said, you guys need to tell me where my boy is.
Wow.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Senator apparently. I went downtown and talked to one of the
big guys and
found out that information.
Yeah. Anyway, he wasn't destined to be a career Marine. He was gonna do his 4-year stint, which he did successfully, honorably discharged and all that. Came home and then he started going to school himself.
Oh wow. I only say psychopaths with the Marine because that's how my brother has always conditioned me to speak about Marines. It's not my own personal feelings. It's just been beaten into me from my brother being in the service. So this is not my personal feelings. I'm just afraid of
Marines are special people. I actually like the Marines a lot. Mm-hmm. I had occasion to work with them during my time in the Air Force, and I always enjoyed working with the Marines. I appreciated their slightly more gung-ho attitude than you found in the Air Force. Yeah. And, you know, I probably would have joined the Marines too, but I was already married.
Mm. Oh, is that a thing? You can't be
No,
married?
I could have joined the Marines still, I believe. I could have still joined the Marines, but the kind of postings and different mm-hmm. things that the Marines do would not have been conducive to married life.
Yeah, that's very true.
And the Air Force was hard enough. I started in the Air Force with the same wife I ended with, which is statistically...
unlikely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pretty statistically unlikely for mm-hmm. the most.
And then your father, I'm assuming, retired from the INL.
He did.
Okay.
Now, mom and dad divorced about 30 years ago or so.
Oh, okay.
So, let's just say they parted ways, and mom has been single, living in the area for most of the 40
Grandma don't
years
need
she's
no man.
Been here.
No.
Grandma's independent.
Independent.
Woman.
I remember Sandy asking me, "Mom, what are you going to do for sex?"
And then you just go, "Like I,
oh, geez.
I can do things for 5 minutes by myself. I don't need anybody's help, right?" You're
That's like, what she was trying to tell me. Yeah.
How could you possibly find fulfillment without sex, Mom?
Yeah,
exactly. Easily. Sleeping longer in bed, enjoying a second cup of coffee by myself. All right.
They're very.
I think we should go in a different direction here.
Hey, Mom, Grandma brought it up.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Grammy's not nearly as puritanical as us Americans.
Mm-hmm. Or me,
yeah,
apparently.
Yeah, that is a funny thing about the Dutch, I guess. They mm-hmm. were more.
Far more sex positive.
Liberally minded about these kind of things than Americans were.
I really wasn't. I was as straight as an arrow. I really was.
Well, that doesn't mean they participated in mm-hmm. things.
But they were okay with it. I remember that with my friend, too, that was from Holland at the time when he was here in high school. There was the juxtaposition between the two beliefs in even just relations on television or things you would see on TV mm-hmm. or the way things were spoken about, especially
we
where
didn't
we lived,
speak
too.
About it. And the area that I lived in was predominantly Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
God, we were such good kids. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yeah.
I find it doesn't matter what religion the kids are. They're going to do what kids are going to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's life.
Yeah. In general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I first learned of this family in particular, it was when Kate and I met at work, and she would start to tell me stories, and I would just like look at her and go, for a while I was like, she's making all of this up, these full blown lies. And mm-hmm. then when she shared the rosary that she carries that you gave her, that story has been shared time and time again on our show and then if people in passing.
Mm-hmm. This is weird because about 3-4 days ago,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that rosary. I wonder if she still has it.
Mm-hmm. She carries it with me everywhere.
Oh, that's neat.
But that's why we're recording today, too, is because those memories that slip mm-hmm. sometimes, we want to make sure to get them here. And then we can reference back. We go, well, at 1 hour, 15 minutes, you actually said this story. Wow. And now we have it. So what's, before we leave, what's the best advice you have for people who are going through a difficult time? What's the best advice you could give somebody?
Get through it mm-hmm. with a positive
mm-hmm.
way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Yeah.
That's
best
short and, you know, that's what you do.
You just have to get through it.
Yeah.
If anybody knows it, it's you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean that.
Wonderfully today. Thank you so much. Everybody, all three of you.
Yeah,
for sharing
your
stories so candidly. I know how cherished these stories will be for your family going forward and filling in the blanks of things. And also as a settler for when somebody gets something wrong. We have it now recorded and you can level the scores.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know how memory is. So some bits and pieces of all of our stories could be slightly wrong.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But it's how we remember it. So mm-hmm.
Which is one of my favorite things about stories. I love the way your brain decides to remember something that happened to you or something that's told to you. Mm-hmm. And it makes for interesting conversation with family members too, mm-hmm. going, well, that's not quite how I remembered it.
Yes,
and then you hear the other perception. All right. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you. I've heard so many wonderful things about you, and I was just so excited to sit down today to hear it firsthand. So thank
you. Nice meeting you.
So I've obviously say it before we start, but it was so special when you asked me, when you reached out.
Yeah.
To have me come and record Grandma Mickey.
So we had talked about it before, but after my grandma's health started to decline a little bit, and then after the official diagnosis, I knew we had to do it before we weren't able to.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was right there behind me saying, yep, absolutely, I'll be there. We need to do this. It's really important. So,
yeah, it was incredibly important. And I had heard so many stories about her leading up to this. And going into this interview from my end, it was definitely not set up like a traditional interview.
Yeah, no.
I really wanted to capture her memory as it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversations that you and your father and her were all having in the room. And there is a lot more to this interview that is going to be kept private for your family.
Yeah. I mean, we go into a lot of different details about other family members or just other things that happened that didn't necessarily involve Grammy. But that's just for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I encourage that, you know, now since having this show and having this equipment, you know, if I'm going to go see my grandmother and I'm going to be sitting with her and just speaking,
mm-hmm.
I just take the recorder with me and set it up in the room to keep these memories.
And it's really, really in the spirit of the original point of the podcast, I think,
mm-hmm.
is preserving that, especially where it's, it will very soon be lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I felt like it was appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did too. These are the fascinating things to me when I sit down with either a stranger or an elderly person or whatever, is hearing these bits. And it still shocks me that she does not view her life story as remarkable.
Yeah, she thinks it's real plain. Yeah. Honestly, she doesn't see anything extraordinary in what she did or. I mean, it's hard to explain how much she downplays it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even when we finished recording that day, you know, she was just like, oh, you know, if it was fine or if it was this or if it was ever, mm-hmm. she was just still on that same kind of thing of being like, well, I hope that was something.
Yeah. Like, I don't know who wants to hear this. Mm-hmm. And we kind of had to convince her to do it because she honestly just thought, well, who wants to hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would anyone want to hear my story? It's so boring.
Yeah.
And I wish I could convey to her that her story has shaped my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
It is something I think about every day.
Take your time.
It is hard for me to find the words, even though I am a writer by trade, to explain how deeply impacted I have been, how impacted her children have been, the mark that she leaves on us.
Mm.
On the world, and when she's gone, which may or may not be soon,
mm-hmm.
the imprint will last.
Mm-hmm. And now her story no longer only resides under the family tree of which yours has grown.
Yeah. Now we can spread it, which is as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the kind of story that people should hear.
Yeah.
Especially people here in Idaho.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't meet a lot of Holocaust survivors here.
You do not. From the side of the resistance to boot.
Yeah.
So I'm incredibly grateful for all of you that are here with us today or listening to this in the future as a past episode, that you also get to hear how remarkable Grandma Mickey is.
Mm-hmm.
And that even if just for a moment of your day, you spend time in remembrance of the lives lost, the atrocities that unfolded across that part of the world, and the way those moments shaped so much of our history, and that these people still walk among us with their stories that they think may or may not be remarkable.
I think demonstrably most of them probably don't see anything special in it.
But that's the thing with this mothball prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
Every story is important.
Yes.
And the mothballs shouldn't get to keep all the secrets.
Definitely not.
Definitely not. Thanks for being here today. As always, I hope you find some good shit.
Please remember to do your research.
Bye.
Bye.